folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We're still here despite the coronavirus, and we have some updates, some local updates about the coronavirus. We also have Dan Adcock here, and we'll be talking with Dan, who's an expert on Social Security, about some changes in Social Security political proposals, but also as some of the regional offices in Social Security close, how you can, if you are on Social Security, you can, who you can contact, and so forth and so on.
We are going to have a great talk about Social Security and Medicare this morning.
Yeah.
I do want to mention that Dan Adcock has been the Director of Government Relations and Policy for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare since 2011. And he's been on the front lines of every battle, and there has been battles. He's been on the front lines of every battle.
And more are coming.
To protect those two important services. And there's more coming. We're going to talk about that this morning, I hope. My news feed on Facebook certainly shows, now I realize this is a little biased, but on the liberal side, but it certainly shows the Trump and his henchmen going after Social Security.
They were planning before the coronavirus hit. Let's talk about that, but let's a little bit of an update for folks. Pretty much all the restaurant seating inside in Sedona has been closed by the mayor's proclamation of an emergency. Almost all the restaurants have either takeout or delivery. And you can go on the Chamber of Commerce website and find out what their hours are, what hours you can get delivery and what. So probably your favorite restaurant will be open for pickup or delivery. Almost all the arts and other institutions have closed in Sedona. And we have, so far in Sedona, one known case of someone with coronavirus who's now staying in their home and out of circulation. We don't know who that person is, and probably, you know, maybe we shouldn't know. But that's the situation here.
Talk about Whole Foods.
For older folks, Safeway has a special time reserved from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. for seniors and vulnerable shoppers on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Whole Foods daily from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. for seniors and people with health challenges. So if you worry about the crowds in the grocery stores or something, you can go early. And I'm sure Bash's has something like this. I just don't have their information. Pretty much everything else in the Verde Valley is functional. The food banks are still working. Many of the churches are not holding in-house facilities. Everyone is busy adjusting to the situation here. There is emergency housing for people, and most of the hotlines are still working. Mike, had the situation Cottonwood?
Yeah, COVID-19 has certainly taken its toll. On businesses, as Steve said, in Old Town, where the restaurant district, the restaurants are closed for seating, open for takeout and delivery. A lot of restaurants that have, and don't forget, we're talking 10 restaurants in three blocks here, have almost all of them have gone to some delivery service. There's some controversy in Cottonwood because other businesses have stayed open. The restaurants and bars are closed, however.
Hotels are still open in Sedona for the most part. They had a conference call and for hotels like the, you know, normally Mike and I'd be heading over to El Portal, Steve Signer's small boutique hotel for breakfast. So the breakfast is closed. The hotel's still open. Our hotel owners, particularly small local hotels, are going to take a huge hit over the next 2 months. This is spring vacation. All the Jeep companies are closed. I used to do Jeep tours myself. Everything is pretty much closed for tourists. This is the height of the tourist season, and you know, I would say it was been cut by 75%, the number of people in town, Mike.
That's true. Guy, local closure information is still available from the outlets that you're used to finding at Verde News, My Radio Place, and others. It's a fast-changing thing, so this little moment in time that we're giving you on Democratic Perspective is just that, just a moment in time. Montezuma's Castle and Tuzigu, the national monuments, local national monuments are closed. You just have to get out there and see. I want to say a little more about Dan Adcock, our guest.
Yeah, let's go to Dan.
We're going to talk. But the other thing I want to mention is that this guy was active in the creation of the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. And for those of us who work in social services, this guy's a hero. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning, Steve and Mike, and thanks for having me on your show.
And you're in Washington, D.C., Dan. Are you guys, the whole committee that you are part of, is all working from home now?
That's right. Actually, I'm speaking to you from my home in Silver Spring, Maryland, but everybody on our staff is telecommuting at this point.
And how is D.C. doing otherwise?
You know, I think it's holding up pretty well given what everybody's going through. I think people here are fairly compliant with, you know, staying at home and social distancing, but also figuring out ways to kind of get through this and stay in touch with neighbors. So I think there's been a lot of community spirit here, which is good to see.
Let's go right to the question of the stimulus package. It's now being held up. While the details of it are worked out, I know those of us on the liberal left side worry about all this money being thrown to corporations that will never get down to people. And so we worry a little bit about what's going to happen with all of that.
Well, we're worried about it, too. I mean, when we first saw the first draft of the Senate Republican stimulus bill, it's the second one that the Congress is working on now. It seemed to be fairly heavy on providing assistance to corporations without many strings attached, and actually provided the very lowest cash benefit to the people who are most vulnerable. So those were some real red flags that we saw initially on. And so we're hoping through the negotiations, because the initial bill was just written by Mitch McConnell and his team, and was not, they weren't, Democrats weren't consulted until recently. We hope those negotiations help to bring a more balanced bipartisan package that does more for workers and does more to hold corporations that are going to get some assistance more accountable.
Well, it's absolutely crazy not to have strings. I mean, you know, 96% of what they gave the airlines last time went to stock buybacks, and that helped no one except executives get fatter bonuses. I mean, it's they must attach strings to corporations. And the BBC last night was just adamant in saying the most help to an economy is to get the money in the hands of working men and women. I'd like you to address, I mean, the rent, any stimulus package so far it leaves out a lot of people who will not be able to pay their rent. We see it. I mean, a lot of my friends are either food service owners or food service workers, and these guys are hurting now, and I don't see any relief coming.
Let's go, Dan, to the question you raised when your first statement that Mike is asking you about, which is that the Republican plan proposed the least money, the least help to the people who have the least money, right? They got the lowest benefits from the initial plan. What's the story on that now?
Well, I think I haven't seen this is very much in flux. We haven't seen what those levels would be, but we know that what happened, at least the initial proposal was, is to provide a cash payment or a rebate to lower income households. And this was primarily for people who have either no or little tax liability, and they were supposed to get somewhere in the range of $600 to $1,200. So that was a concern to us because people who are higher income workers were going to get much more, anywhere from $1,200 to over $3,000, up to a limit of about individuals who have incomes of $75,000 or couples who have $150,000 income. So as a starter, we thought that was particularly ill thought out, that individuals who have very little income would get the least amount of money. Plus, our other concern was that we wanted to make sure seniors who don't file their income taxes and would have difficulty putting together the paperwork in order to get this money, to remove those obstacles. And the language we've seen recently is those obstacles would be removed. So just on this particular aspect, this particular cash rebate for people who have either have very little taxable liabilities or none, now we're encouraged by some of the language that will make it easier for seniors to get this without having to go through a lot of red tape.
That's good news. And Mike's other issues that he was sort of asking you about is, I guess, help to the – so much of the economy, particularly in food services, Mike was saying, is based on tips and people showing up. The amount of losses that our restaurants and our hotels, for example, in a commercial or economy here in Sedona that's based on tourism is going to be extraordinary. The losses are going to be tens of thousands of dollars right in our busy season. What's in the stimulus package for people like that who are living a lot from paycheck to paycheck, but also basing their money on gratuities and tips?
Well, I know that there's definitely an expansion of unemployment insurance, that's going to be more generous in the coming weeks, and so that should help. And some of this, some of these direct cash payments, whether it's for people who don't have much income to begin with or have some, should help as well. So at least there's those two things together should be some relief to individuals who find themselves in that unfortunate situation.
What's happening with the stimulus package now? I know that here's how it works, folks. The package was really designed out of Mitch McConnell's Republican group, and then it's passed on to the Senate. And, of course, it's aimed, I think, probably, from what I've seen, aimed at the helping big businesses and stuff, and without any kind of control over how the money is spent. So if you remember the stimulus of the Trump administration, they gave the big businesses all this money, all the wealthy people, and all they did was do stock buybacks and give more money to their shareholders. That huge unemployment thing never happened. The stimulus, in some sense, didn't happen. So how's how's it going to work, Dan, in terms of the package in general that Mike was asking about?
Well, in terms of corporate relief, we're hoping that the priorities, at least of the Senate Democrats, emerge as the strings attached to the corporate assistance that's provided, that employers are required to retain their workers, that they can't do stock buybacks, that they can't increase CEO pay, and that there's as much oversight, if not more, than what we saw in the TARP legislation back in the Great Recession in 2008, that a lot of these things aren't, they're not giveaways. They're specifically loans that have to be paid back. So those are the kind of guarantees that need to be part of it. But I do also want to mention one of the other priorities to Democrats that is especially important to seniors is that Senator Elizabeth Warren has proposed that Social Security benefits, also SSI benefits, veterans pensions and railroad retirement, and people who receive state and local government pensions be eligible for an additional $200 payment a month for the rest of this year. And that's really important because, when we're talking about seniors, their average income is in a range of about $26,000 a year. So when they get any kind of, with their existing Social Security benefit or an increase, these people are living check to check, and so they're going to turn right around and spend it in the local economy, which is going to provide an immediate huge stimulus. So we're hoping that Senator Warren's proposal is added to the stimulus bill that the Senate is working on right now.
That's a real stimulus bill. That actually impacts real people where they live. I hope I'm not going to ask. I know you don't know the, and maybe you shouldn't tell, you can't, the chances of that. But that's the real deal. $200, that would help immensely.
And, Mike, that would really help people in the Verde Valley, particularly in the lower valley, who are living on very, very small amount of income.
Yeah.
And probably less than the 26,000 figure that's the average. So if that would be really helpful.
So let's move into Social Security and Medicare. We're talking to Dan here, Dan Adcock, an expert. And who works at the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and for whatever reason, it's always under attack in the United States, and I just don't get it. Someday, you know, what it is about this, these two programs that are so beneficial and do so much, have so much impact on the quality of American lives, that it would always be under attack. The Trump budget, and I guess this is where some of the information flows from, a recent Trump budget shows yet another attack on Social Security and Medicare. Can you help us with this?
Sure. Well, the most recent, the fiscal year 2021 budget that the president released back in February would cut Social Security disability insurance, which is very much part of Social Security, by more than $90 billion. And the way it would do that is it would try to use some approaches that have failed in the past to try to get people who are on Social Security disability insurance either to go back to work or stay at work. And that's a losing proposition any way you cut it, because you know, when we look at the lifespan of people who are on Social Security disability insurance benefits, when they start, if they're age 50 and they start receiving benefits, I believe it's one in five men die within 5 years of receiving benefits, and one in seven women die within 5 years of receiving benefits. And so to suggest that a lot of people who are receiving Social Security disability insurance can go back to work is just flies in the face of reality, because these are people who are severely disabled. So that's one part of the president's budget. The president's budget also would cut Medicare by about $500 billion. And these are not benefit cuts, fortunately, but they do cut payments to providers, to doctors, and to hospitals, which would mean that access to docs and hospitals could be cut for seniors. And then also the budget would cut the Medicaid program by $1 trillion. And, you know, I know this, you've said at the front, you know, the work that I did on long-term care previously, but, you know, sometimes people forget that Medicaid is, for many Americans, is the only game in town as far as getting long-term care, being able to go into a nursing home or home and community-based care if they should need it. But if you cut the Medicaid program by $1 trillion, it's going to mean that there's going to be a lot of seniors who need long-term care are not going to get it. And I'm not sure what we would do as a society if that happened.
Yeah, I'm not either, Dan, because so many people go through every dime they have, and then without Medicaid, they would, I don't know how they would get the Medicare. The only other thing I'd say is that this part of the bill will really hurt local hospitals. Local hospitals are hurting economically anyway. And to cut Medicare payments to our doctors and hospitals, Mike, is a disaster.
Especially in rural areas. You know, Arizona, at least, you know, Jan Brewer, our Republican governor, didn't do much and did a lot of harm. But one of the good things she did was extend Medicaid coverage to 700,000 Arizonans before she left office, and that, and bless her heart for that. The 14 states or the many states that didn't do that are losing hospitals, and further cuts is insanity. I want to. This is a question I've always wanted. We're talking to Dan Adcock, senior policy advisor for the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. It's kind of a long title, so if that means anything, congratulations, Dan. Your mother must be proud. You have a very long time.
The title of your committee takes up a whole line of text in
really
my printout.
Is. It's a real mouthful, isn't it?
But one of the things I wanted to ask, and this is no secret among especially SSI and disability and regular, how hard it is to get the hearing officers. And so I guess I now we're getting into sort of the nitty-gritty guts of Social Security. How do hearing officers, A, get appointed? Why do they have a hearing? And why is it so hard? It seems like you have to hire a lawyer, or it takes many, many tries, which in some cases comes out as many, many years, to get Social Security disability. What's up with that?
Well, it is intended as a program for people who are the most severely disabled. And there is a claims process. The difference between it and retirement is that, when you become eligible for Social Security because you're aged, because you're retired, that's pretty cut and dry. It's not like that. The facts of that can be contested. But the issue with disability is that something you have to prove in order to get benefits, and so that's why there's a whole adjudication process. Obviously, if you're terminally ill or have an illness that's so obvious, then hopefully that you can receive consideration. But you're right. Only about 40% of people, when they apply for Social Security disability insurance, actually are awarded benefits. And the process currently can take over 590 days to go through. In terms of the mechanics, the way it's adjudicated is an administrative law judge is hired by the Social Security Administration to go through these cases. And, yes, you're right. You do have to go out and find an attorney. Sometimes some of your benefit payments can be made contingent on paying their fees, and so there's arrangements there to make that possible for people who are fairly low income, in which they are likely to be under these scenarios. But it's really tough, and of course now with the coronavirus, it's going to be made tougher. It's my understanding that what's happening now with the adjudication of these cases, that they're still being processed because a lot of staff now at the Social Security Administration are starting to telecommute. But in terms of the actual hearings, I think they're starting to move towards doing these hearings by teleconference. So hopefully more of that will happen so that a huge monkey wrench won't be thrown into that process, and people, the time it takes in order to get disability benefits won't be needlessly long.
So a lot of Social Security offices are at least temporarily closed, Dan. How do people who on Social Security have questions, what should they do? How should they contact? Because I know the Social Security Administration is still clicking along just fine.
Right. Well, they can go online. There's an online portal called mysocialsecurity.gov. And they can access their own Social Security account and see their work history, and there's some transactions they can do online. They can also call the toll-free number, which is 800-772-1213. That's 800-772-1213 to actually talk to a real person. And then there is still some limited public service, face-to-face service, that people can get, but it's limited to people who are blind, people who are terminally ill, or people who have SSI or Medicaid eligibility issues that are related to work. It's certainly far from what we would like it to see. We think field offices and person-to-person contact on their questions and things they need is essentially important. And our concern right now is the ability of the people on the toll-free customer service line could be hampered because of the fact that the Social Security Administration's operating budget last year actually got a little bit of a cut. The year before it got a relatively big infusion of cash. But before then, for several years, the Social Security Administration's operating budget really was neglected big time, to the point that it took over an hour for somebody to answer the toll-free number. And so they are really short-staffed, and they really need a big cash infusion to get back to where they once were. And, it's not as though the population of seniors is stagnant. you know, over the next few, right now, 10,000 people hit age 65 every day, and we're going to nearly double the senior population for 2030. So the demands on what they need to do for the public will only grow, and unless they get adequate funding, that's going to continue to be a problem.
Let me change change approaches here a little bit, Dan. You know, during the campaign season, some of us have heard, or all of us have heard, and have taken great comfort in plans to increase. Once you, talking about Elizabeth Warren, talking about Democratic candidates, the plans to change Social Security for the better, and by this changing the structure, that there will be some increases, that there will be some benefit help coming down the road. Let's talk about some of those plans, and maybe since we are talking to Dan Adcock here on in Washington about the Social Security administration, I guess which one has the best chance?
Well, that's a good question. Talking about the Democratic presidential candidates, all of them have been fairly good on our issues.
Yes.
Certainly Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Elizabeth Warren, Senator Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden. They all support either eliminating or raising the cap on Social Security payroll taxes, because today, right now, when you pay, as a worker, when you pay your share of the 6.2% FICA taxes for Social Security, you pay up to an income limit of $137,700. So if you have income above that amount, you're not paying anything, any taxes on that income. And if we were to either raise or eliminate that gap, not only could we extend the solvency of the Social Security Trust Fund for decades, we'd have money left over to make some important benefit improvements. And we see that as key moving forward, because of the fact that more and more Americans, especially because of stagnant incomes, and also because fewer employers are offering any kind of retirement benefit, that for many Americans, Social Security will be their only form of income in retirement. And so that's why not only should we not be cutting Social Security, but we should be looking at ways to expand benefits. And certainly the Democratic presidential candidates want to do that. Congressman John Warren, John Larson, rather, from Connecticut, has a great plan that we're supporting, too, that would also do that actually has seen some movement in the House. So that's something that's been really key to us, is expanding Social Security benefits.
Talk to us a little bit about the Larson plan. What's involved in that?
Sure. So this is the bill is called the Social Security 2100 Act, and what it would do is it would raise the cap on payroll taxes. That it would stay, for now, it would stay where it is today at $137,700. And that amount increases every year, that cap. But then on any income above $400,000, that would be taxable. And over time, by 2049, that cap would go away completely. So as a worker, you would pay all of your income, you'd pay 6.2% payroll taxes on all of your income. But it also would make the cost of living adjustment more accurate by using the consumer price index for the elderly, which does a better job, especially capturing the disproportionate share that seniors spend on their health care expenses. It would increase the special minimum benefit, would be particularly helpful to lower income workers. And it also would provide an across-the-board 2% increase in benefits for everybody. In fact, one of the things that Congressman Larson is trying to do right now is to add some of these benefit improvements to the stimulus bill that's being negotiated in the Senate. We'll see what happens. But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is also putting together an alternative to what's being negotiated in the Senate. And Congressman Larson is trying to insert this new proposal that would temporarily extend these benefit improvements into the House stimulus bill that's currently being assembled.
That would be a great coup, at this time of Republicans in power.
Sounds great all the way around, Mike.
Yeah, they're looking, they're actually being forced to consider actually helping rank and file Americans that if Larson and Pelosi and others that can get that in to this package, that would be great. That would be a long-lasting benefit that's... So what else should we look for that's coming down the pike here? you mentioned, and this is once again a personal... as state pensions disappear, or as in my case, have no cost of living increase, then incomes remain stagnant for your whole retirement, and you end up doing things like radio shows or taking social service jobs or anything else you can to but at least I have a pension, is a state pension that have. So the idea is there any? Is there any benefit in on a Social Security sense for implementing any other pension programs that, you know, Social Security is what it is, and without significant increases, it's not going to be enough. So many people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, make jokes about not getting Social Security, but it's not going to be a joke. Their lives are going to be greatly reduced without some sort of increased benefit.
Well, I know that there's also legislation that the House Ways and Means Committee has considered this year that would encourage more employers to provide retirement benefits and also require an automatic enrollment. And if an employer does have a 401k type of plan that they're automatically enrolled when they're employed, they would have to opt out not to participate in it. And I think there's also a lot of things going on in state governments that have been a real incubator for trying to encourage private sector employers to offer. But I think that why we are so interested in making Social Security benefits more generous because of the fact that for most Americans, it's the closest thing that they will ever have to a pension. And so it's something that works very well. The program itself is very, very popular, regardless of party affiliation and age. And of course, cuts to the program are equally unpopular, regardless of party affiliation and age. And so that's why our first priority is to try to build up that program, to make the benefits, more equitable, to make them more generous. And that in itself can help to address income inequality, especially as people enter their golden years. But the other part, that is going to be really important is that none of that's going to happen unless we elect majorities to the House and the Senate and elect somebody in the White House who understands that problem and is willing to address income inequality amongst seniors by making Social Security benefits. And that's why we at the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, in addition to, their advocacy on Capitol Hill, are very much part of, in the political arena, with regard to PAC endorsements we make and endorsements and why all Americans really need to take this next election really seriously, because it's going to make the difference between whether seniors are going to have an independent, dignified retirement or whether they're not.
Excellent point, Dan Adcock. We're talking that this election, regardless of other issues, regardless of your favorite candidate in or out on the left, if you're going to be a single issue candidate, this is the single issue maybe that you want to pay the most attention to, whether you or your mother or father are going to be able to live in dignity and not suffer needlessly at the hands without some sort of basic and that what the whole idea of Social Security is and was. It's just I've bought cat food. It's not cheap.
What I'm hearing Dan say, Mike, is that fundamentally this is a political issue, and you have to have a political solution to it. People have to support candidates who support Social Security. And fundamentally, for all the talk of the details and the great plans and stuff, without political support, Social Security will not be expanded, will not be improved. And so you really have to look at the election. You guys endorse people in the primaries or just in the general election?
We do some primaries. If it's a contested primary where it's a fairly heated battle and both candidates especially are good on issues, we tend to stay out of those. But sometimes there's a candidate that's head and shoulder above the others where we will get involved. But we definitely are involved in a lot of general election races. For instance, we helped Kyrsten Sinema when she ran for the Senate in 2018, as well as we've been helpful to other House candidates in Arizona over the years too. So, but that's just kind of it gives you a sample just in Arizona alone. We're a national. We have a national political activity action committee, and we're active throughout the country. In addition, not only just writing checks to campaigns, which in itself is very important, but actually coming out and doing in-person endorsement events with seniors and the media. And we're gonna, hopefully as soon as this crisis abates and people are able to go back out in public, we'll be doing a lot of those, especially in the fall, going out and trying to whip out up enthusiasm for candidates we think are going to be particularly friendly to Social Security and Medicare.
Mark Kelly. Let's talk about Mark Kelly. What's the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare's position on Kelly?
I'm not sure that we've taken one yet. I think we're likely to support him, so that's where that is right now.
Okay.
We have a process that they go through, and so I think that that's something that's still ongoing. But I'd say at this point we're likely to support him.
Sure. He's sort of looking good. It would be a critical race to take back the Senate in many, many ways.
Absolutely.
For those kinds of things that we're talking about this morning. So talk about, if you can, what can rank and file, what can listeners do? You're this mucky muck in Washington, and no offense, and you're in the thick of the fight, so to speak, and we're here in Podunk Radio Land doing what we can. And
in dynamic Northern Arizona.
Dynamic Northern Arizona. I'm sitting here. We do live stream on Facebook, Dan. So you're now a hero in Northern Arizona.
But
I'm sitting here with mask and gloves on to try to show a.
It improves his appearance, Dan, over Northern. We're going to ask him to continue to do this after the crisis is over. I'm half serious anyway about that.
Yeah.
Well,
because I have to look at him week after week after week, Dan, year after year.
I'm wearing a special mask to accommodate my extremely large nose. But point is, what other than voting wisely and voting this issue having this issue paramount in your mind when you're choosing a candidate because it's so important to so many Americans, what else can just regular old people do?
Sure. Well, if they're one of our members, member of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, they're going to be updated on a regular basis on what's going on and where we need them to apply pressure.
So joining, they can join the committee.
They can join, yeah, only $12 a year. It's a deal.
Wow, $12 a year.
That's good.
Why don't you give us that contact information, Dan?
Sure. Maybe people so they can call us toll-free at 800-966-1935. It's 800-966-1935. Or they can join it. They can visit us on our website, which is ncpssm.org.
Better repeat that again, Dan.
Okay, sure. ncpssm.org.
All right, then you can always just Google the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare and probably get there, too. 1935, was that the year that Social Security was? I'm just looking at your phone number.
That's what the number is. It's because of the year that the Social Security Act was first enacted by Franklin Roosevelt, who, by the way, we have a really strong link to because his oldest son, who was a member of Congress, started the National Committee. And we continue that tradition by working with his son's son, Jim Roosevelt, who's a member of one of our advisory boards. And we're very proud to have the Roosevelt lineage as part of our organization. But to get back to your question, if they're one of our members, we'll let them know about specific important bills that they need to help us support with their members of Congress, but also to be there for us when we need them to call their senators and their congressmen to oppose legislation that would be harmful. And so because of that, because we're organized, we can really punch above our weight, and having the harnessing all these the millions of members that we have across the country really can help us to have these legislative achievements that we've had in the past. And so it's something really important. Then obviously we want people to be as active in the election as they can to you know, we do a voter scorecard every year. We'll be putting one out towards the end of summer, early fall, so that people can see how their incumbent members, how well they voted on issues that are important to senior citizens, and that can help them make their not only their decision to vote, but who they give money to, and also who whose campaign they volunteer. And I'll tell you, you know, I've been at this for a long time, and as long as I've done any work for congressional campaigns, you're constantly surprised by the number of seniors that are in a campaign headquarters, stuffing envelopes or out on the streets doing canvassing in their neighborhood to try to get elected, to try to get people elected. And so, and also because of the fact that seniors themselves are the most reliable demographic of people who vote in the election, more than any other demographic. There's a lot, you know, being attention being played right now on trying to get young people to vote, and that's great. But seniors are much more reliable on a constant basis, and so so that's why the political power that seniors have are enormous, and if they harness that power towards preserving Social Security and Medicare and making them better and making improving these benefits, it can make all the difference in the world.
I do want to follow up on that. I've been politically active for a while, and we had, just like we do now, by the way, Arizona is getting lots of attention from the Democrats. We have paid organizers, but back when Obama first ran, we had our one of our first paid organizers, or one of the few that came to Northern Arizona. And long story short, we were talking about her volunteers, and she said the best volunteer she has ever had in her relatively short, I mean, she was in her 20s, but her professional or political organizing career was an 81-year-old man that was virtually unstoppable. He did it all. I mean, he would canvass, he would phone, he would be in the office, he would stuff envelopes, he would train other people. All the things that you would want a political activist to do. So I have to admit, I didn't, because I was just sort of getting into it at the time in my old age, and yet here's a guy that was easily 20 years older than I was that was her best worker. So I think that's, when it comes to this kind of work, you can have a great impact way into your golden years, as we like to call them. All right, let's, we only got a couple minutes left. Let's kind of wrap up what we talked about today.
I would say the best things people can do to follow up on the conversation, Mike, is to go to the website of the committee. Yeah. And find out about these issues. I think you've heard important issues, and you've heard things that are in the mix. You need to watch what's happening now with the stimulus program, folks, to see if there's benefits for ordinary people coming out of it. Hopefully the Democrats will be able to squeeze some of them. We want to thank Dan Adcock for talking to us from the National Committee. And you got it, Mike, to preserve Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, we've only.
So we appreciate you being with us, Dan. Good luck. Take care of yourself out in D.C. Mike, we have
you. Yeah, you bet. One of the things that flow out of, there's so much that flows out of the Social Security offices and the act that we don't know about. We talk, there's Social Security, there's check, but there are, please, and that's, we should devote a show to that. Dan Adcock and Matt Rickman, maybe we should devote a show to all the other things that flow from Social Security Act and those offices that are for the benefit of rank and file Americans.
We should say that, Mike, that Dore and almost all the other Democratic organizations have suspended meetings. So all the meetings and breakfasts have been suspended for temporarily.
And don't forget, you can get this show at vvid.org. Our podcasts are on vvid.org. Thanks, folks. See you next time.
Thanks, Mike.
Listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.